Hello, this is Homer Simpson.
Homer, can you name that title?
This Things I Believe.
Can we accept that?
Woohoo!
I'm just never going to let that joke go. This is the Extra Hot Crate Podcast, episode 302 for the week of May 11th, 2020. I am front seat Doug David T. Cole, and I'm here with performative weight gain Sarah D. Bunting.
The spare tire means it's art.
Secretive mom Tara Ariano.
I don't want to talk about that.
And fetal position floor crier Robert Krutt.
Please pick me up.
All right, hang on. I got the real one here. So here we go. There is a real intro for you guys, for your completist.
Okay.
Have you had time to look at the menu?
Can't worship both God and money, Christian. America's going to vomit up its own blood.
Can I get a... I'll get a cheeseburger.
Thank you, Dave. Welcome to Extra Hot Grape. Before we begin...
Weather update. From Austin.
Rain live. In Austin. There may be some thunder, so if you hear that, sorry.
It's definitely not Tara farting, if that's what you think.
Wait, I could control that. I can't control the weather. Joining us this week for our very, very professional podcast is first-time guest Robert Krutt. Hello, Bobby!
Bobby. Hello. Bobby. So nice to hear your voices. Hi, and it's great to be on.
Thank you so much for joining us for this very joyful, light, just a little confection of a show. We're here to talk about I Know This Much Is True. This is HBO's new miniseries starring Mark Ruffalo and Mark Ruffalo and others. Here's a brief plot summary. It's based on the novel of the same name by Wally Lamb. I don't know why Dave is focused on These Things I Believe, because I have not, ever since we picked it as a topic, in fact, ever since it was announced as a miniseries, every time I see the topic, the title, the song, I Know This True, it plays in my head, except it's the version from The Wedding Singer that ends with Robbie and Julia that the late Alexis Arquette sings. Anyway, that is beside the point. Here is what I Know This Much Is True is about. We have twin brothers in the early 90s, Dominic and Thomas, who are both played by Mark Ruffalo. They have grown up with a secretive mom played by Melissa Leo, a bully stepdad who's been mean to them their whole lives. This has been a particularly affected Thomas, who has paranoid schizophrenia. As they have gotten older, their mother develops cancer. And in the last months of her life, she gives Dominic a manuscript that her father wrote, and he brings it to a translator to get it translated in time for her to read it before she dies because it's in Italian. This gets him entangled with this woman at the local college who's played by Juliette Lewis. Her name is Nedra. Dominic also has an ex-wife named Dessa who's played by the great Catherine Hahn, and he is not over her, as who could be? It's Catherine Hahn. Thomas, as we open, literally in the cold open of the show, as I mentioned, he has paranoid schizophrenia. This is in the run-up to the first Iraq War. He has determined that what needs to happen to forestall war is a sacrifice. And so he goes to a public library with a large knife and cuts off his own hand to do this sacrifice. And in the hospital, begs Dominic not to let the doctors reattach their hand, and Dominic complies. But at the end of the first episode, which is all that has aired so far, they think he's going back to the facility where he lives, the group home, which is like a low security facility, but instead they're moving him to a high security, not okay, kind of borderline, you know, criminal institution for the criminally insane, and everyone is very upset, and that's where we leave things. It's, as I said, very light. Things get worse from there. So we should have probably known as soon as we saw Derek Cianfrance's name in the credits, this wasn't going to be a fun romp, since he previously brought us Blue Valentine, the history's saddest love story. But Bobby, were you prepared for the misery porn he has inflicted upon us all with this, or did you feel differently about it?
Not at all prepared. In fact, I was so excited. And it's a well-done show, and I have good things to say about it, but it was funny when you emailed about doing the show and you said what you were talking about. I did have that feeling in my gut of, I'm not ready for this right now.
Yeah.
You know, not to bring the rest of the world into it, but it really is so unrelentingly dark. It's incredibly well acted. The direction is great at times, but it is just, it's painful to watch. And I started making a running tab of all the terrible things that were happening in this episode. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I think on the average of every 3 minutes, something awful happens to the characters.
Yeah.
So I watched it with admiration because I thought the acting was great and the directing was great. But at this moment in history, I don't know that I was ready to sit for an hour with this kind of story.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's what I did. You know, I did watch it and I think, okay, well, this moment is wonderful. And this is a story that some people will get a lot out of. And maybe I would at another point in my life. But yeah. I wrote down this quote that Melissa Leo says, where she says to Mark Ruffalo, with everything going on right now, it's all just a little much.
Yeah.
And I just thought, yep, like, all right, well, I'm going to put that on the preview for this.
Sarah, what did you think?
I found this like almost abusively bleak. And yes. I don't think it would matter whether, we were in, with capital A, all of this going on. I don't think it would matter, at least to me, because it's just like it is unrelenting, like the palette. Yeah, I mean, there's like every not predictable exactly, but like if there is a list of beats that could make a story about a paranoid schizophrenic person's sort of loss of agency, and they just check off every single thing, and then you get into the second episode and it's like, I mean, it can't get worse, you say foolishly aloud in your office. And then, oh my God, it gets so much worse. And then I was like, why am I doing this to myself? Is this ever going to take a turn for the happier? So I went on Wikipedia and read the plot summary of the book.
Me too.
I did the same exact thing, yes.
Was like, so, and on top of it, it's like laughably melodramatic. Like, who came up with this twist? Like, I mean, it's like at the level of a 9-year-old in terms of understanding what's going to be credible.
Yeah.
The acting is really good, but another part of it is, I recently read Robert Kolker's brilliant Hidden Valley Road, which is the current Oprah Book Club pick.
Great on salads, too.
Coincidentally, I would like to say. It is about an actual real family that of the 12 children, 6 of them had schizophrenia. So, or some like severe chemical mental illness. And I just have no more room for that. Like, I can't lift that story any longer. I just can't. Yeah. So I respect it and I am done. Because it's just like getting whatever happened to his balls at the end of episode 1 is what's happening to your heart for 6 episodes. Nah, I'm all set.
It's like the director is a chef and he's brought you the greatest misery tasting menu he could come up with. And that was his goal. Yeah, I mean, sure, I guess maybe it's well acted, but like the first episode and the pile on of misery, like the misery porn aspect of it, made me so cynical about the whole project as a thing that somebody made that like I really just as a piece of art, I feel like it's very calculated, which is at odds with the pain, I suppose, we're supposed to empathize with. You know what I mean? Like it seems so constructed, you know, out of all these depressing gray blue Lego box of life, you know, and here's this guy putting them all together and like, oh, I said to Tar, I turned after the first episode, like, this is like the director is like a kid at an ice cream bar where you just let him go up by himself and he comes back to the table and there's so much shit on it. You can't see the ice cream anymore.
Why did you put Vienna sausages on it? I just did.
Yeah, not only that, like there's things that like really you shouldn't put together because it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. Like there's gummy bears and chocolate sprinkles, two things that you don't put on the same bowl of ice cream.
Yeah.
Or like a few years ago, there was this unrelenting action film like shot in the first person. It was like Hardcore Henry, I think.
I think that's right.
this is like the depressive sadness version of that, where it just starts off, here comes the sad, and it doesn't let up. Like, there's no breather. There's nothing to mitigate the sadness. And it just keeps going. And now everybody here dipped into the Wikipedia to figure out, like, okay, that was pretty rough. What does the future entail? Tara, can you read it and just, like, give the highlights of all the other things that happened to these people?
Dominic starts seeing a therapist. While Thomas is being treated, Dominic is covertly informed of sexual abuse taking place in the hospital. As if it wasn't already, like, seemed bad enough with the quasi-militaristic guards that bring him in there. So he helps expose the perpetrators. He succeeds in getting Thomas released, but Thomas soon dies, apparently by suicide. After his death, Dominic discovers the identity of their birth father, who is part African-American and part Native American. I'll interrupt here to say that was a twist, because I was sure we were going to find out in the manuscript that the grandfather was their father, and that was the secret the mother was keeping.
That's why it went on Wikipedia.
As a spicy meatball.
What kind of BC Andrews bullshit is this?
Anyway, back to the Wikipedia entry. That was something their mother had told Thomas, but not Dominic. In the midst of this, he's also reading this autobiography, which discloses details about the legacy of twins in their family. And he also learns that his live-in girlfriend, Joy, who we didn't get to in the first episode, has been seeing a gentleman on the side who is her bisexual half-uncle and has also let him watch her and Dominic during sex on previous occasions. She's also HIV positive, having contracted it from her secret lover. She asks Dominic to raise her baby if she dies. At first, he resists, but later, having found his way back into relationship with Dessa, they decide to remarry each other and adopt Joy's daughter. And the book ends with Dominic able to cope with the considerable loss, failure, and sorrow in his personal and family history. I mean, you say so. I'm not so sure.
This is another issue, is the, like, likability of Thomas, which is, like, we're seeing everything from his point of view.
Dominic.
Excuse me, that is Dominic. The likability of the protagonist is whatever. We all know that that's not necessary. We all lived through the Sopranos era, but this guy is, like, you can't have both this cynical-seeming misery porn that Dave referred to from the ice cream bar of hell and this kind of asshole person that you're spending this much time with. And when it's not horrible, it's awkward. No.
Bobby, no. Was that your read on Dominic as well?
Yeah, it was just, you know, and Dave mentioned something earlier that you just wanted one moment of levity or some sort of light. And every time it seemed like something like that was going to happen with Dominic, I keep going back to the scene with him and Juliette Lewis, where you think it's going to be like, oh, this is going to be our moment to breathe before we get back into the depths. And then, of course, the minute that upbeat song starts, you know that everything's going to go south. Yeah. And then it's like, somehow it made Wham depressing. You know, it's like that was playing. And then he seems like he's going to smile. And then, of course, everything goes to hell in that scene. So that was, I mean, I liked his performance as that character, but I just felt like maybe the direction was, there was no way for him to dig out of it.
Yeah. I thought they established that nicely early on, too, when they're talking about, they find out the mother has been diagnosed with cancer and he decides his gift to her in her last days is going to be to remodel her kitchen. Like, yeah, that's what she wants. It's to, like, live in a construction site. That's definitely about her and not about you. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I guess I have to credit See in France for successfully creating the environment that Dominic lives in, because I also found it oppressive and yearned for escape. You know, like Sarah talked about the lighting, like it's true. Every aspect of it, it just seems, it's so ponderous and heavy and like just, I don't want to be here.
And it's all like the little things they do too. Yeah. Like there's a scene where Thomas runs out of the car, runs across a busy highway, and like everything about that, like it had recently rained, it was very blue and gray cloudy, he runs into a shallow scummy pond, like even within scenes they pile it on. Like it's amazing what a Russian doll of misery they managed to make in just one episode. Like, there's no way in hell I am watching another episode of this.
Russian Doll of Misery is the best quote I've heard in a long time.
It was so oppressive that I was just looking for even just plot things. Like, why are either of these boys, men, they're in their, 40s, but why are they still talking to this awful stepfather that bullied them through their childhood after their mother died? Like, we don't even get a line about why he's still in their lives. Like, they hate him. Why are either of them still talking to Ray, I mean, by the time they introduced the dog, I was like, oh God, please don't let the dog have died before they can like open the door and pet the dog. Like, honestly, I truly was expecting that to happen.
And you were not wrong.
Please,
to do so.
Like, Sadie.
This is a show that invites those dark thoughts, for sure. Like, everybody's game, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just hard because, like, there's just not that much to say about it, except, like, it's brutal.
It's brutal, and it's kind of brutal in a way that if you took any one of these things, you could think it was something from the 80s, one of those very special movies or very special TV shows in the 80s, like a hard look at schizophrenia or treatment in institutions or cancer or whatever. Except this is like more anything, more everything.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's really true.
Also, SIDS.
Right. I forgot that part.
Like, oh, are you still here? Here's a tiny coffin. Fuck you.
So now that we can authoritatively compare whose blue gel New England prestige TV series is bleaker.
Oh, God.
Captain America's.
Yeah.
Or The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, my God. Incredible Hulk's. Yeah. You don't want to see me when I'm sad. All right. It's go around the dial. First up, Tara Ariano.
Well, perhaps in this time of turmoil, you have read some things about Amazon, like how it's not making it possible for warehouse workers to practice social distancing, or how it's engaging in union busting tactics, or how it's showily firing people who have tried to bring attention to unsafe conditions at their facilities, where, by the way, at least one employee, as of last week when I wrote this, had died of the virus. Well, forget all that, because Amazon has a new docuseries celebrating frontline workers who are bravely keeping society running during the pandemic. It is called Regular Heroes. Hilariously, it was announced on May 7th, and then the first episode premiered May 8th, so not even the pilot was made available to critics ahead of time, probably because it is gross. The problem is not the people who are profiled, who are undeniably amazing human beings, for sure. And here they are. Trevor is a senior inventory tech at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York City, which is where they normally do orthopedic surgeries. Obviously, those are not happening right now. The hospital and he have been drafted into emergency COVID treatment. Burnell started a grocery store in the Lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Since it's one of a tiny handful of businesses that are even still operating in the neighborhood, it is also a laundromat and snack bar and barbershop and soup kitchen once a week, which he operates in conjunction with Color of Change, a great organization. During the pandemic, he's also been giving away groceries to people who need them. Haley is a talent agent in LA by trade, but for the past 5 years, she's also been volunteering to provide food and support to people experiencing homelessness on Skid Row. This has, of course, gotten more difficult during the pandemic since a lot of their food donations used to be restaurant leftovers that they're not getting anymore. She makes up the gap from her own funds, but she's been furloughed and hasn't been earning an income for the past 2 months herself. Wow, all these people are great and 100% deserve our recognition. And here's the great news. They get it. Alicia Keys FaceTimes them from a closet somewhere in her mansion, I assume, to tell
imagine
them.
Imagine to them or whatever.
No, to tell them they get presents. Burnell is getting all new restaurant-grade appliances in his kitchen. Trevor is getting a tutor for his kids, who otherwise have been homeschooled by Trevor and his wife, who is also a frontline worker at the hospital, plus also brand new laptops. Haley is getting a whole truckload of groceries and her own personal rent paid for a year. Wow! Except, here's what's impossible not to think about while you watch it. Whoever is operating the camera sure seems to be very close to the subjects, like Burnell wears a mask 0% of the time. The camera operator spends a lot of time with Trevor at work at the hospital, and even if the filmmakers, and presumably it's more than one person on site, are not scared of getting sick themselves and are walking around in head-to-toe Tyvek, they are trying to keep people from dying all around you. You are in the way. Also, in Trevor's particular case, there was just a story last week about the three people at Elmhurst Hospital in New York whose job it was to distribute PPE, personal protective equipment, and other equipment from the materials management department. And I say was because they all are now dead of COVID. We get one tiny mention from Trevor of how fucked up it is for him to order cases of body bags, which is reasonable considering his job used to be ordering supplies for like knee replacements. And we see his whole family make a fun moment of spraying his clothes with alcohol when he gets home from work. But presumably this guy was chosen to be profiled because he wasn't going to get on camera and say, I'm scared I'm going to die or that I'm going to infect another member of my family and kill them. Or he did say that and it didn't make the edit. So in the grand scheme of what these people are sacrificing for the sake of supporting their communities, the gifts that they get from the show or Amazon or Alicia Keys, unclear, are insultingly insufficient. Like, how about pay the kids' college tuitions? How about fund Haley's organizations in perpetuity?
Calling essential workers heroes, it just means they're undervalued.
Exactly.
That's all. That's the shorthand of this. It means...
Yes.
Thank you for doing shit that you were kind of being forced into. Like,
right.
Yes, you may have made that decision, but we are not valuing you to the extent that we should. It's like off COVID. It's the teacher argument, right?
Right, of course.
Teachers are heroes. Yeah, yes. You're paying them $2 a day. You're
right. Like, and I can't remember the first person I saw say it, but it's like using the hero language about people who are doing frontline jobs as if they are troops is like, oh, that's just you weaponizing language. Absolutely. To make it seem like when they start dying en masse, it's like, oh, but they signed up for this. Like, really? Because some of them got jobs at grocery stores. Also, how about a lot less of this piecemeal charity would be necessary if a certain company that had a net income of $3.3 billion in just its final quarter of 2019 paid any federal taxes at all? Anyway.
That's in Prime Heroes?
Yeah. Anyway, the next 7 episodes will be out every Friday. Do not let Amazon launder its public image with this propaganda. It is bad and Amazon is bad. Now, having ranted about that, my plug this week is for Again With This. We are talking about Melrose Place. And this week we will also have an episode of our Patreon episode, Again With This, where we will be talking about Grant Show's first episode of 6 Feet Under. That was super fun. Also featured a Beverly Hills 90210 guest star, actually two, if you count Peter Krause. So check us out there on Again With This and Again With This.
Bobby, your turn.
Okay, well, obviously, as my reaction to I Know This Much Is True might have given away, I have not been watching a lot of dark programming during the sheltering in place. And it's been funny because so many people have reached out and said, what should we be watching right now? And I've recommended all these really high-end things like, oh, catch up on Atlanta and Better Things, or watch the Twin Peaks reboot, or things like that. And yet in our house, we have been in the comforting, comfort blanket embrace of Antenna TV, which is... It's a network, I guess, and it's in a lot of markets, and all they air are reruns of 80s TV shows. So our TV, we have a small little house, and the TV is right in the living room, and all day it just stays on this channel, and you catch Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Give Me a Break, The Hogan Family, and Head of the Class, and all of these are being watched, and it is running away from your problems sort of thing, but it's been fun to watch all of these old shows that, you know, not to betray how old I am, but were certainly part of my growing up. And seeing some of them now, some of them hold up, some of them are not good at all. Different Strokes was my favorite as a kid, and it is not good. No offense to anybody who worked on that show, but it's not funny. And it's kind of the I Know This Much Is True of sitcoms, because there are so many dark episodes. They put those kids through so much. Give Me a Break is on almost every day, and I did not remember that they let Nell Carter sing so much, and she's so good, which is great. It also shows how dated it is. There's an infamous episode where Joey Lawrence is in blackface, so if you want to see where we've come, yes, and it still airs, and it came on, and both of us in the house just kind of had to sit and stare at it and watch it in horror. And Facts of Life is on probably the most. I loved it when I was little, but... my wonderful life partner, still loves the show despite its failings. And they've been showing a lot of the later episodes where Cloris Leachman took over for Charlotte Ray, which I forgot.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I forgot that. And she's, you know, she's a Cloris Leachman and she's great. And the big discovery for me, though, was the Hogan family, which is an often forgotten show. It's not great, but it features a very Tara and Sarah sort of reference in that Dylan from 90210's dad is the dad on that show.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And Jason Bateman, even then, is so funny. I had
He's
forgotten.
He's the only one.
He holds on. He's so funny in it. And I had totally forgotten because that's not a show that you really see in reruns. Oh, and Head of the Class as well, which is a glorious throwback. None of these are brilliant shows, but they are certainly the embrace that a lot of people could use right now, I think. So that's what we've been watching in our house. And in terms of my plug, I guess, is I have a couple books of poems that are available in all the usual places. If you want to avoid going to the aforementioned Amazon, you can always go to the publishers. All that information is on my personal website, which is online. So thank you very much.
We will link that in the show notes. Thank you.
Sarah D. Bunting.
It's time for a return to the depressing with a dispatch from Grandpa Buncey's Wireless with Pictures Hour, a.k.a. What is Sarah watching on PBS? Well, American Experience aired a two-parter on George W. Bush. Last week, I have mostly enjoyed their presidential programming because it is quite informative and also delivered in the soothing dulcet tones of Will Lyman or Michael Murphy or whoever is making me feel smart just by being in the same room as this program. There's a fair amount here, I guess. Like, it's 4 hours of material, and at the same time, it seems kind of slight. It's as though they couldn't get certain figures to participate. W's gubernatorial years seem kind of glossed over. I know it was only like 2 years anyway, but still. I really wanted some people to get on camera and talk some shit about what he was like in college, because I think that is his true nature. Naturally, no. The narrator this time is Corey Stoll, who I think they're trying to bring along. Like, he's kind of in the minors of these PBS narrators right now, but they're like, he's the whatever narrator of the future. But this seemed like a job for one of the more seasoned guys. Like, I really feel like Will Lyman, who is the frontline guy, would sort of remind you, like, I think we're all in a headspace right now where W seems relatively harmless. And in fact, we long for his brand of mere ineptitude and Freudian faffing. It seems, you know, at this distance, rather benign. It completely wasn't. The man is a war criminal. But I think in order to get that across, you need a heavier weight narrator.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like, I am far from a baby about this stuff. And I know it's almost 20 years ago. And it's not like this wasn't the defining moment of his presidency and for many people in the generation. But if you're going to start with 9/11, don't immediately, like, you know, they're starting with like the 911 calls from the plane and then they cut straight to footage of people jumping. It's like some B-roll, like 5 to 10 seconds of B-roll. It's all I ask. Like, I saw that stuff in person and I don't need my handheld, but you got to give people some room to walk up to that. And they don't. There is a content warning at the beginning, but you're never expecting to go straight to, you know, terrorist event. Anyway, I'm not sure I can really recommend this one. Generally speaking, these are good episodes of American Experience and they'll be on the PBS app. You should check them out. But this one is like, I just think they should have held it also until capital A, all of this was like a little, we were further along with it, or, I mean, we'll never get past it, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, cheery. Speaking of cheery, for my plug, on the Best Evidence newsletter that I write with our esteemed colleague Eve Beatty, we're doing a special thing this month, the alphabet of true crime. So true crime A to Z. We are about at the halfway point. Right now, you can start at the beginning at any level of subscription. It is free to all subscribers. So check that out. Bestevidence.fyi.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but The Good Fight and its sister show, The Good Wife, had this reputation for being one of the most tech-savvy, tech-aware shows on television. And this season of The Good Fight, there's this whole bullshit storyline about Memo 618, which is like from some other show. Like, it's so ridiculous, but that's not what I'm crackpotting about today. There is a storyline where Diane is trying to research Memo 618, and she does so by doing computer searches in various law case index sites, one called Barswarm. And when she types in what is Memo 618, her computer actually shuts down, like the person who was using the manual pump to power her computer had just had a heart attack and fallen to the floor. And then she goes to the investigator, whose name I forget. What's his name?
Jay.
Who's also, you know, knows a lot about tech and stuff as part of his job to figure out what's going on. And here's that scene. Two things to pay attention to. One, when a search is not found, it makes a Mac OS system noise, which never happens. But whatever, I can forgive that. But then, like, just listen what happens after they do this search.
Maybe it was a bug on your...
There. That's the same.
And maybe it's the website. What'd you do next?
I type, what is Memo 618?
Oh, no.
What's going on?
Yes, what is going on exactly? First of all, computer viruses don't shut down. Yeah, you can have a virus that does like basically like overflows your system with information and crashes it. You can even do like a forced reboot sometimes, depending on what's going on. Like, these are things that can happen. It is possible to infect your computer with something that will turn your computer not necessarily off, but freeze it to the point where you can't use it. But what it doesn't do, you know, those like Frankenstein power switches on the side of the walls where they go ka-chunk and, or whatever, or the ones like that's not the way computers work. There's not like a trickle of power going to your computer. And then when your computer starts losing power, it goes me. And then like the visual is there's like a pop up from the site that says your membership has been terminated. And then you hear beep, 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 and the screen slowly fades to black. And then the computer is just off. That's not the way it works. And I could forgive it on a dumber show that has been sloppier with tech, but this show generally has been better than most. A computer isn't an analog device that works on the power of the stream making that wheel go around, and when it's dry season, your computer dies down. That's not the way it works. Anyways, thanks, elsewhere Dave. In the Extra Hot Great universe, next on Extra, Extra Hot Great, Sarah will be watching 6 episodes of Parks and Recreation and reporting back. And then on Friday's Quarantine Helper, it's the family canon, great parents and siblings as chosen by us. And then on the next Extra Hot Great Prime, we welcome back Dan McEachern to discuss the peak of peak TV, Ultimate Tag.
Woo! Really excited. This extra credit topic comes to us from Jeff. It is titled Defeat from the Jaws of Victory. Jeff writes, How I Met Your Mother's bungled finale is legend among mid-aughts sitcom watchers. They didn't just not stick the landing, they destroyed almost a decade of built-up goodwill by reversing course right at the finish line, killing off a newly beloved character and yelling psych about the twist that ended the pilot. Go back in time and rewrite a series finale so it now betrays the show's characters and pisses off its audience to the point that it's all anyone remembers about it anymore. I will go first. I started with the finale everyone loved, Game of Thrones. Just kidding. I went with Justified, which if you've never watched it and have already gone through every other show on all your lists, the whole run of Justified is currently on Hulu. You should watch it. It's so good. Obviously, what follows is spoilers about what did happen in the finale, so proceed with caution. The main antagonists on Justified are Raylan, played by Timothy, off with his pants, and Boyd, played by Walton Goggins, and have been through all six seasons. And what makes the show so fun and unpredictable is that their former relationship as friends from childhood, who, as younger men, dug coal together, means that while they're usually on opposite sides of the law, they're never entirely opposed. Raylan is a U.S. Marshal. Boyd is in the Dixie Mafia. Even so, going into the finale, the general guess was that Raylan would be forced to kill Boyd, or that Boyd would be forced to kill Raylan, to the point where, like, I felt like convention of wisdom, like everyone, I think, was just expecting one or the other of those things to happen. Mm. And it doesn't. And even though there absolutely is a showdown where it could happen either of those ways, and Boyd is despondent, pretty much dares Raylan to do it, to kill him. So that's how I ruined the Justified series finale. Raylan loses his mind and Boyd is successful in manipulating or goading Raylan into killing Boyd, which is how it would have to go down because at this point Boyd is out of bullets. And it's not that I want both characters to remain alive so there could be a revival. That should never happen. But it would be a betrayal of both their characters for Raylan to take out Boyd in anger when, you know, he could bring him in and have him be subject to legal action. And also because it would rob us of the very final scene of the series, which takes place between the two of those characters and is, I think, frankly, perfect. Sarah.
Okay, well, I think there are people who would argue that The Sopranos did this anyway. I don't know any of those people and don't want to. And I believe I got that episode into the canon, so we're gonna leave that where it is. But even if you don't agree with what David Chase did in that final episode or resent the manipulation, it could have been so much worse. And here is how. The members only jacket guy comes out of the bathroom, peels off a full face mask to reveal that he's actually the Russian. And that actor is like a foot taller than the actor who plays members only guy, which is part of what makes this fuckery so repellent in theory. Screams that he is not an interior decorator and put remote back on docking station, and shoots Tony 15 times in the chest. Mayhem ensues. Cut to black. Chiron, 2 years later. With Green Day's Time of Your Life playing, we see a montage of all the surviving characters, including Carmilla and the Russian's wedding, Polly hijacking a truckload of baby wipes, the Bing Girls, because it's HBO, and to wrap things up, a pair of flip-flopped feet and the hem of a bathrobe coming down the Soprano driveway to grab the Star Ledger. Pan up to Meadow smoking a cigar and smirking at a front page headline, which reads, in 84-point type, Girl Boss. She looks directly at the camera and winks. End of series, which is then thrown in the garbage along with David Chase and set on fire.
Amazing.
I mean, it's the shittiest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bobby.
Okay. I chose, in honor of Tara's love of the show, Friends. And I received some assistance from previous guest Sarah Baker with one of the references in this description of how the finale could have gone terribly wrong. In 2004, as Friends neared its finale, Warner Brothers knew that it had one last chance to squeeze out every last drop of its cash cow. With that in mind, the studio planned for a massive crossover event using all of its comedic properties, regardless of the network, as a sort of early version of the shared universes that would take over Hollywood a decade later.
Oh, no.
As the concluding chord of I'll Be There For You rings out for the last time, the finale begins. After the penultimate episode's cliffhanger, we find out that Rachel does not get off the plane. She takes the job in France, where she has a meet-cute with the designing clothes job for Sex and the City's Alexander Petrovsky, and they go on to a relationship that alienates her from Monica and Phoebe. Thank you to Sarah for letting me know who Alexander Petrovsky was. Speaking of her New York friends, Monica meets a new friend, Will and Grace's Grace, is another thing for you, Tara, at a competitive parenting seminar, instantly becoming best friends. Mm-hmm. Oh. Together, they provide emotional support to Phoebe, who has just dumped Mike to be with her old chicken-poxed marine flame, played by Charlie Sheen, on loan from the Warner's production of Two and a Half Men. Chandler, trying to cobble together advertising work, agrees to take on the long-forgotten Veronica's Closet as a client.
Oh!
Remember that show?
Yeah.
With Kirstie Alley's title character insisting on thinly veiled Scientology lessons in all the commercials. Ross, distraught over Rachel's departure and with a documented affection for younger women, as seen during his creepy tenure as a college teacher, ventures out of Manhattan to Brooklyn, where he meets one of the broke girls of Two Broke Girls, which was in the early stages of Warner's development, to whom he confesses, I guess we really were on a break. Standing at the river's edge in Brooklyn, it's so bad. Standing at the river's edge in Brooklyn, he gazes upon Manhattan and says out loud, New York was the best friend of all. Credits roll, then open on the button. Joey gazes at a meatball sub and says, I love you. The opening notes to the Joey theme song ring out and prepping the beloved spinoff. So that is the Friends.
Chills. Wow. Truly.
Honestly, all you're missing is the Animaniacs. And then I think you've really nailed the whole Warner connected universe.
Adding it in, and Warner Brothers is like 5 minutes from our house right now. I'll go pitch it this afternoon.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Holy shit.
All right. Well, so mine is the exact ending of MASH, except with an additional scene of Colonel Potter warning about the new threat in Vietnam, and then Pierce turning to the camera and saying, sign me up. Me grits his
teeth. Oh, no.
I got another one. All right, it's the Americans. But instead of Paige staying behind at the train station of her own free will, her parents see U.S. Marshals arrest her on the platform. I know it's Montreal, but just go with it. The lead marshal knocks on the window at her mother and says, you're next, or my name isn't U.S. Marshal Hawkeye Pierce. Dun, dun, dun. Just kidding. One more. 6 feet under, except Hawkeye Pierce is responsible for everybody's death. It is time for the canon. Bobby is presenting this week. Take it away, Bobby.
Okay. Considering how I Know This Much Is True started out this episode of the podcast, I suspected there was a very real possibility that the four of us would simply be staring blankly at our computer screens with tears clinging to our faces at this point. So I decided that the canon submission had to be something funny. I began thinking about my favorite comedies and realized that they were all workplace ensembles. 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, Taxi, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Cheers, blah, blah, blah. And then I remembered something that happened at the very start of our sheltering in place here in L.A. Out of nowhere, like a wonderful comedy mirage, a local cable channel ran a 16-episode marathon of the late, great, massively underappreciated 90s workplace ensemble comedy, News Radio. My choice was clear. I would submit an episode of this show for the canon. News Radio is a curious case in a lot of ways in that it clearly deserves to be viewed on the same level as those other admired shows I just mentioned, but it's frequently forgotten and hasn't become an after-the-fact hit. There are plenty of shows that aren't hugely successful during their initial airings, but find a following later, particularly in the age of streaming. Although recognized as the classics they were always, now, Parks and Rec and 30 Rock, for example, were always considered on-the-bubble shows during most of their first runs. However, News Radio, which was famously mistreated by NBC, had strikes against it during its primetime airings and still now, years later. Back during its initial run, the network changed its time slot 11 times in 5 years. 11, that's, you know, what could have been a worthy addition to the 90s must-see TV lineup on Thursday night, hopped around endlessly until the network dumped it. And now, when some shows have found their well-earned, albeit delayed, popularity thanks to streaming sites, News Radio is getting shorted again. Only a handful of episodes are available streaming, and on the shockingly unuser-friendly Crackle site. Occasionally, it's the worst. Occasionally, it will pop up in reruns on basic cable, but when it does, it's rarely on a regular basis. It's never had a chance to stick to anyone's consciousness other than those of us who fanatically remember it. That's why its sudden appearance 2 months ago was so wonderful. With all that in mind, I am happy to discuss this show and submit an episode for the canon. And as a side note, of course, this podcast has never been one of the places that underappreciated the show. I know that two episodes are in the canon already from a long time ago. Aired as its third season premiere, President is a quintessential News Radio episode, and for my money, one of its funniest. The A story is crazy, but has just enough plausibility to give it stakes, and the B story is so simple that it gives the cast a freeing opportunity to be funny without much scaffolding. Importantly, though, and the reason I've chosen this particular episode for submission is that it gives every cast member at least one moment to shine. It truly is a highlight reel for the entire ensemble. The two storylines in President are relatively straightforward. In the A story, station manager Dave, played by Dave Foley, returns from a Midwest vacation, which the rest of the staff sees as an oxymoron, of course, to find that Jimmy James, played by Stephen Root, is planning to run for president. Notably, Jimmy tells his star reporter, Lisa, played by Maura Tierney, that he fully expects her to investigate him closely and not spare him a real vetting. In summing up his platform for the staff, Jimmy puts it in a way that only a rich white businessman, even one that we've come to love over three seasons, can. Clip one.
Jimmy,
yeah.
I'm still not clear on what your platform is.
My platform. My platform is, let me ask you guys a question. What do you think's wrong with this country?
Unemployment.
The federal deficit.
Government cover-up of alien bodies.
Overly complicated tax system.
Alien bodies, the government's trying to cover
okay.
up.
Okay, thanks, Joe. That was a rhetorical question. You know what's really, really wrong with this country? Nothing. Your confusing thesis has captured my attention. Tell me more.
It's a sign of how good Stephen Root is that he's able to make Jimmy James a character we enjoy so much, even as he spouts off an American assessment only a rich man with money to burn can make. At least Jimmy's platform shows off his very privileged position in the world, but his self-awareness of that fact makes for one of the funniest music cues in TV that I can remember. Clip two.
Tell you what, how about for an official campaign theme song? That song, my Maserati does 185.
Yeah, life's been good to me, Joe Welsh, 1978. I'm on.
That's my girl.
Other than Dave, the rest of the staff is on board with his presidential run, all for their own reasons. Lisa relishes the challenge of finding Jimmy's skeletons, and Bill, of course, sees personal gain. Clip three.
This just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, I agree. He has to have an ulterior motive.
Exactly, and I know what it is.
What?
Insanity. The man's going nuts, and we've got front row seats.
Do you think he needs help?
I will personally kill anyone who tries to help him. This is going to be the biggest story of the year, and I'm going to be right there on the inside. Like that guy who was friends with the Kennedys, who got the inside scoop and wrote the book about it?
I think there was actually 70 or 80 guys.
Every journalist in the country is going to be eating right out of my hand.
This all naturally leads up to Jimmy's announcement press conference, where Lisa continues to dig for dirt, even solving an infamous mystery, which was in 1997 unsolved. Next clip.
It's not in your official bio, but my sources tell me you were a lobbyist in Washington with close ties to the Nixon White House prior to and during the Watergate affair. Can you tell me where
I was? Deep throat. Does that answer your question? You remember? Deep throat, the guy that got the crooked president kicked out of office, that was me.
You were not deep throat.
Well, then I challenged a real deep throat to come forward. Shit, I didn't think so.
And while the deep throat reveal is a great one, it's not the final nail in the coffin. What will unravel his campaign, Lisa finally catches on in the next clip.
With all due respect, sir, are you running for president just to meet women?
Yes. Yes, I am. I didn't think anybody could figure that out, but I guess I underestimated Lisa Miller of WNYX. I suppose it was less of a bid for the presidency than a cry for attention from a lonely man.
While this stunt does not lead to Jimmy marrying his long-sought-after Loretta Swit, as referenced in other episodes, or even Dave's mom, as referenced earlier in this episode, he does wind up with thousands of dates. I'll leave it to others to discuss how they feel about this ruse for romance, but here, in the safe embrace of a sitcom and Stephen Root's performance, it works. The B story is so simple and silly it's perhaps brilliant. Matthew, Andy Dick, grows a mustache. That's it. And yet it is so dopey and such a simple setup that it just lets the cast have fun and show off their chemistry. It's easy to forget due to real-life shenanigans that Andy Dick is really funny. On news radio, he's so fully Matthew that in real life he began to complain about people thinking he was the character. And that's one of the reasons why the show was so effective. And this episode is an ideal example. Everyone on that show is so fully their character. When Steven Root started appearing in more and more shows, it took me at least two or three before I stopped saying Jimmy James when I saw him. And audiences could be forgiven if they thought that Phil Hartman, by all accounts, a warm and wonderful human being, was actually Bill McNeil. Matthew's mustache storyline allows for some great moments as he tries to channel his cliched image of masculinity through his true nature, but also from the rest of the cast. Catherine's mix of shock, she hilariously slaps him across the face, seeing the mustache for the first time, and gentle attempts to get him to shave show off Candy Alexander's often underused talents. It all culminates in an exasperated Matthew trying to convince them once and for all that the mustache should stay. Next clip.
You know what? This is sexy. Okay? S-E-X-E. I know what I think. I think you're all just jealous.
Whatever, I'm not.
Oh, no, no, actually, you're not. You're a frightened little girl.
He follows that up by trying to get the women to kiss him to see that they will love the mustache, and naturally none of them take him up on his offer. Most hilariously, Beth, Vicki Lewis, who gets to deliver one of her best lines in the series here. Next clip.
Well, Beth, it looks like me and you are going to swap some spit. How about it?
You know what? Why don't I just spit on you from here?
Someone else does take the challenge, and it allows for a classic Phil Hartman delivery. Next clip.
Oh, for crying out loud, do I have to do everything myself? Actually, that wasn't entirely unpleasant.
Ultimately, President is a quintessential episode of News Radio and canon-worthy for two notable reasons. First, both of the storylines, while ridiculous in their way, do have a heart of reality to them. The tension between their ridiculous nature and the simplicity is what makes them so funny. In later seasons, the show would explore even wilder setups, like an episode in space, an episode where everyone is hallucinating from lack of AC, or an episode on the Titanic. And I love those too, but an episode like President is right in that sweet spot of finding the hilarity and the plausibility. The less said about the plausibility of a supposed rich guy running for president, the better, and admittedly it may either make for quaint or tricky viewing, considering our current political nightmare, but even the B story is realistic. In fact, at the time this episode aired in the 90s, I was working an office job in between undergrad and grad school, and a guy came in one Monday with his hair suddenly sporting frosted tips, and his wardrobe had entirely changed to Chandler Bing-esque button-down bowling shirts. The sudden fashion change was all anyone could talk about for a week. So Matthew's mustache is more real than you may think. That is a true story. The second and perhaps more important point is that this particular episode gives each cast member a moment to shine. There is no one superfluous here, and each of them have a chance to show why they were great. Dave's exasperation never tips into annoyance. Lisa's persistence is admirable. Jimmy's disarming charm tricks everyone. Bill is, as always, a cocktail of narcissistic and sycophantic behavior. Matthew is a clueless creature. Beth gets to channel her energy into a hilarious dream of being the Secretary of Transportation. Catherine gets to both sweet talk and slap. And even Joe Rogan, here years before he will cozy up with Alex Jones and thereby forfeit any chance of me listening to his voice on anything other than News Radio, gets in some funny alien abduction jokes. All this combines into one of the classic episodes of what should be considered a classic show. I know it is a classic to a lot of folks, of course. As much as I say that it's underappreciated, I don't know what exactly I would want to see happen other than it appear on an easier-to-use streaming site. Sometimes maybe it's better for shows when they don't become time, life, cultural landmarks and instead stay the perfect thing just for you. Would Freaks and Geeks have been better if it was a huge hit? Did Seinfeld actually benefit from becoming so huge that it felt like it could use the Green Day song about the time of their lives in the finale clip show? So maybe widespread acceptance isn't necessary, and great shows are just as well existing on their own plane of appreciation for some of us to find and love. I can't control how the world views a show, but at the very least I can submit this hilarious, classic to me episode of News Radio for the canon.
Thank you so much. Sarah, since you've watched the show the least, why don't you go first and then Dave and I will clean up after you.
I laughed many times. Just the way that this is edited is also extremely skillful. like the, you know, the performers, of course, contributing to that, but the smash cut away from the reactions to the mustache into the credits is amazing. There's a cut, like during Jimmy's press conference, there's a cut away from this unfortunate, like giant blow up photo of him, which has a like TR mustache. And then the next time you see it, it's been dropped down behind some poinsettias so that you can only see him from the nose up. It's this very like Monty Python looking moment, which I laughed at. This was really just an enjoyable and like well-crafted bit of television. And one of the funnest things for me about it is how much fun everyone in it is having and how they obviously realize how good it is, like how good they are at being in it and how like they're just having fun. Like that smile from Phil Hartman after like that was not entirely unpleasant. He's like the character is laughing, but mostly it's Phil Hartman laughing, like, and just like everyone in the scene is both in the scene but also being happy to be in the scene. And sometimes that's fun, like there's sort of unprofessional breaking of the fourth wall or like when you see what the actor is versus the character. Kerr Smith trying to kiss other boys comes to mind. Jimmy Fallon being a fuck up comes to mind. This is not that. This is like, I don't know, the sum of everything or the whole being greater than the sum of the parts in a show. And just some of the line deliveries are so funny. Like, especially, I can't believe I'm about to say this, Joe Rogan, just like he has one job, which is to insist on the alien abduction thing being important. And he does it perfectly. The use of the phrase nattering nabobs, like who's going to love that more than Grandpa Bunsey? Probably no one. The delivery of he's too smart to be president. It's just really good TV. But I have no perspective because I see like news radio episodes that are, you know, that we watch for the canon. I have seen many episodes at Tara and Dave's home, but as we have heard, it is not readily available. It's not one of those that you can just like put on and marinate in. So my perspective on whether this is a particularly good episode is not as good as the rest of the panels. So I'm going to hand it off. But you know that Bunsey criterion, did I want to keep watching? Yes, I did. So well done. And this presentation was delightful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And or Dave.
I'll go next. That's such a good call on the editing. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. It's one of the things that makes this feel so modern, even though it's a multicam. It doesn't feel corny in the way that multicam sometimes can.
And just to explain that edit that she was talking about, Matthew slowly rotates to face the three women of the office. Beth screams as soon as she sees it.
Lisa spit steak.
And then
Catherine
just
holds off,
slaps him right across the face, and as soon as that slap hits, that's when it smashes to the title card.
Yeah,
it's really like
it's very good,
and the spit take is like using the full COVID 6 feet of personal space. Like it is epic.
Yeah, it's great. The mustache plot is great. The amount of stuff that they wring out of it. I mean, starting with, you know, just Dave being confronted by it. I mean, literally, and then trying to have a conversation that he just can't stop laughing. Like, I can't act like that's not on your face. They have an intervention in the bathroom. At one point, Matthew's running through the office shirtless because they've tried to forcibly shave him. He's crying like, it's just a mustache.
And there's my favorite part of the whole mustache one is there's a scene where they're just at the conference lunch table, whatever it is, outside Dave's office. And they're all just staring at him and just like slowly getting angrier and angrier, just looking at him. And there's like a few beats and somebody just shave it off.
Yeah.
And it's like perfect. It's a perfect like familiar piece of comedy. You know what I mean? Like, they yes. all are friends, you can tell. Kind of
thing. Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy gets mad about it, and he tried. The reason that there's the...
I have that clip.
Excellent.
When those scrappy little pilgrims first landed about 300 years ago... Hang on a sec. Matthew, come here. What's the story with your face, son?
So the reason that the photo, the TR picture is at the press conference is because Jimmy shows it to Matthew as like to try and scare him straight mustache wise, yeah. as like that. I carry this around with me to remind myself anytime I think I want to give myself a makeover not to do it. And Matthew's horror. And I mean, the fact that we get the payoff is great. But even if we never saw the picture, it's like the two of them together are so good. It would have been enough, like just their acting, you know. Never showing it to the audience would have been enough. But Jimmy is such a great character. I mean, Bobby, you're so right when you say that, like, there's really no weak link in this cast, and it never happens where there's an episode where you're like, it's a blank episode. Like, it's always great. But Jimmy is especially such a fun character, and like, the amount of hilarity they get out of him is so good. And the fact that they came up with this, obviously it aired in the fall of an election year. And he's so funny, so, you know, just playing with the cliches of the race, and his underlying reasons for doing it it's like the payoff of that are good. The press conference is great. Lisa calling him out at like the deep throat exchange, which goes on longer than is in the clip, when he's like, well, what if deep throat isn't here? And he's like, the real deep throat is here. Me next. Like, their timing is so great. This is like a show in its third season that's just firing on all cylinders because they all know each other so well. The writers obviously know how to write for this cast. It's such a delight. Great presentation, great episode. Loved revisiting it. Thank you so much. Dave.
Your confusing thesis has captured my attention. Tell me more.
Yeah, I do like this episode. The problem with News Radio, though, is that there's so many like really good episodes that you feel like you're sort of obligated to put a cap on how many you want to put in the canon. But this is like a really good episode. If I'm being honest, I could say like I could point to episodes that I like more. Like, there's the one that's in the canon, the public domain, which is the Mark Russell piano one. There's Super Karate Monkey Death Car. Arcade is actually not in it. We talked about it, but it's not in it.
Oh.
Smoking is another good one.
Mm-hmm.
And the Office Feud one, which is the Complaint Box one, which is like really good, really solid. So these are all good episodes. I think like those ones are notable for like very crazy moments. I think this one is like the mustache thing is ridiculous, but grounded. Those other ones have more sort of like crazy moments that you remember. So I think this is a good example of like News Radio being sort of more, not realistic, but this is a less elastic reality than we see in some other ones. And I think this is a good example of that. There is a lot of physical comedy in this episode that, of course, we can't get across in the podcast. The very first bit is Dave in front of the elevator at the start and Joe needling him about information on whether he and Lisa are back together. And Dave says something, well, I don't want any of the gossip get around. And immediately Joe just does a 180 and walks away. He's like, okay, bye. Like, he's got what he needs. He's off. The cold open slap stuff is amazing. The thing I was talking about where they're all just sort of like seething, staring at his mustache at the table until they just get absolutely fed up. Like, there's just moments that are really hard to communicate on paper. Like, I'm always at awe of those moments, like just thinking about like there's the writer who writes and his tool is words. And then like somehow in the end, you get this product where it is a wordless piece of comedy that absolutely is hitting on all cylinders.
Yeah.
It's sort of amazing that that happens.
But I would also say to Bobby's point, like this, the mustache storyline especially does speak to like how a tiny thing in an office becomes an obsession where everyone is talking about it, even though it's like, because you're bored and it's so stupid that like it's like this is the news of like the week or month where like no one can shut up about X's mustache or wardrobe change or whatever.
The three of us haven't been working in an office for a very long time. And we often say, like, if there's one thing that you miss about the office environment, it's the gossip and that kind of stuff,
right? So true. Yes.
It's petty.
We make do.
It's not
It's true.
It's not a good thing, but you do. Like, if you're being honest with yourself, you sort of miss that. And I don't know what it is about that that drives us, but that's mm-hmm. the one thing. And I think, yeah, you're right. This speaks. It's adjacent to that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a good episode. There was moments where Bill McNeil has crazy eyes when he realizes that there's this opportunity from him that his boss is going to be a crackpot presidential candidate. That was so Bryan Cranston-esque that made me think,
yeah.
What a missed opportunity we had. These guys never played brothers and stuff.
Yeah.
Because they have the same energy when they're being duplicitous or petty. And if those were like two guys from the same family and their forces combined, that would have been a great comedy moment.
But. Yeah, Bill is really funny throwing softball questions to Jimmy at the press conference. He's like, I hear you have a dog. Sounds like a great pooch or whatever he says.
Yeah. And you're right. Jimmy James is an enjoyable character. I enjoy his JFK-esque thing here, which I also clip.
I am a cipher wrapped in an enigma, smothered in secret sauce.
That was pretty good. So let me say this. I think there are episodes of News Radio that I would have chosen in front of this one if I were presenting. But I think this episode is really great because it has more of a true Office feel to it beyond the other ones I was talking about. So I think this one speaks to the News Radio that can be a little more grounded, but still fire on all cylinders, still be very funny, which it is. So with that, shall we put this to the official vote?
Let's do.
Sarah DiBunting, what say you?
I say yes.
Tara Ariano?
Me too.
Me too. So that means... News Radio, Season 3, Episode 1, President. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Camp.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Why, it is time to find out about our winner and loser of the week. Tara has the winner.
Well, it's possibly Bobby's former coworker who came in one day with frosted tips and a Chandler Bing-esque wardrobe, Guy Fieri. Is that in fact your former coworker, Bobby?
We never saw him again. He did disappear. So
could
who knows?
I be using any more sauce?
Seriously, winner of the week is Guy Fieri, the host of Diners, Dive-Ins, and Diners, Drives, and Dive-Ins, whatever. You know the show I'm talking about. He is our winner of the week because...
Bam!
No, that's Emerald. He has raised $20 million and counting for laid-off restaurant workers during this time of COVID when, of course, restaurants are closed for... Their dining rooms are closed. Kitchens are usually open, and you should support your local businesses. He's given out 40,000 grants to laid-off restaurant workers, and he's still continuing to raise more money with partners like Pepsi and Uber Eats and other companies. So that's amazing, and good for him. I know people treat him like a clown. He's very memeable, but... Like, there's no question this is
I don't see the aliens guy out there raising money for...
You're goddamn right you don't.
Illegal alien.
He has a name, Dave. What is his name?
Giorgio Tuklas.
That's right. Yeah, so Guy Fieri. Good job.
Loser of the week.
Oh, once again, Lori Loughlin. yet another attempt to get the college bribery case thrown out. This one claiming that she was a victim of a frame job. It failed. The judge is beginning, I think, to get a little impatient with mm-hmm. Team Giannulli. Little Olivia is worried that more embarrassing photos are going to come out, a la her on a rowing machine with like athletic gear that still has tags hanging off it from Models. She did manage to praise Lori as a one-of-a-kind mom on Instagram, which that's one way of putting it, I guess.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, speaking of things that are nice, you know what time it is? I thought there was more.
Is it game time?
It's game time. Welcome back, everybody, to another game time. This is only the second game time of the seasons, and our season scores are value guests leading with one. Tara, Sarah. Zero. Today we are playing Merry Maladies. from David Ellis Dickerson, good friend of the show,
hey,
who earns himself an extra credit. This quiz focuses on the best kinds of diseases, fictional ones. I'm going to give you the name of a disease or disorder from a TV show. If you guess the show it came from just the name, I'll give you 2 points. If you get it after the description, you get 1 point. I'm going to let you guess on both of them.
Okay.
For example, if I were to say Space Madness.
Ren and Stimpy.
The Ren and Stimpy show would be correct. If you needed a hint, it might be this futuristic condition has afflicted at least one chihuahua. Note that precisely because this is about fictional TV diseases, there's going to be a lot of space. Also, a few TV shows are vectors for fun sickness ideas, so some TV shows will appear twice.
Okay.
Tara Ariano, steel meal situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah D. Bunting, sadly, has 0 steel meals. I have 3 steel meals plus an extravaganza gong. Mm. Valued guest, that's you, Bobby, have 3 steel meals. So how that works, Bobby, is if someone else craps out on their question, you can very quickly say steel meal, and you can, before Dave gives the correct answer, and then you can steal there. By that point, it'll be 1 point, correct. I guess, because we can
could make the difference, though.
Yes,
so you may
absolutely.
Okay.
You have 3 chances to do that in this game.
All right, let's throw it to Picky to see who will be going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, order today. Sarah, Bobby, Tara, are we ready to play Mary Maladies?
Yes.
Yes. Indeed. Get to the game. Less talky, more gamey.
All right, here we go. This is part one. All the shows are animated shows.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, remember, you'll get one guess on just the name of the disease, and then, if you need it, another guess after the hint. Your
Got
disease
it.
Is the suds. The suds.
The suds?
The suds, like in a bathtub.
Okay. The Simpsons?
The suds is cured by using the patient to scrub things.
Using the patient... to scrub things? SpongeBob SquarePants?
That is good for 1 point. To Bobby. Your disease is Three Stooges Syndrome.
I'm going to need the next clue.
A condition where the patient has contracted every disease known to man simultaneously.
Oh, The Simpsons.
Mr. Burns had Three Stooges
That's
syndrome.
Right.
Correct. Tara.
Yes.
Your disease is cutie pox.
Cutie pox. My Little Pony. Friendship is magic. What?
Correct.
Really? Seriously?
Yes. A disease that causes cutie marks to sprout all over the patient's body can be cured by eating a flower sprouting from the seeds of truth, don't you know?
Oh, Jesus.
Good guess.
Sure. Amazing.
All right, back to Sarah. Turtle pox.
Turtle pox.
Correct.
I don't know. The Smurfs.
It's like the flu, but for turtles.
Uh-huh. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Good for one. Back to
Overthought
Bobby.
That one.
Diminished gluteal syndrome.
Okay, I'm going to need the clue.
A birth defect where someone, like the reoccurring character on this show, was born without buttocks.
This seems like I've never watched this show, but I'm going to say Family Guy?
It's a decent guess. Anybody want to take a guess for Shits and Giggles?
I feel like I know it, but I can't pick it.
Yeah.
I can't place it.
We've seen it.
Uh-huh.
King of the Hill.
Oh, of course.
Oh.
Tatara.
Yes.
Electrogonorrhea.
Futurama?
An STD that humans can get from robots, known as the noisy killer. Back to Sarah. Hopping cough and worry warts.
Hopping cough and worry warts.
That is correct.
The Smurfs.
Correct. A cough that makes you hop. And warts you get from worrying. Back to Mr. Krett. Torsonic polarity syndrome.
Oh, dear God. I'm going to need the clue again.
All right. Remember, you can guess freely on the first one without...
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. I'm going to say maybe is that Futurama, too?
It is not. Here's your clue. A condition where humans are born with buttocks over their face.
I get all the butt questions.
Yep.
Were they born... Is that Ren and Stimpy?
Steel Meal.
Steel Meal from Tara.
Actually, I'm not going to use that.
I don't know if I can even... I don't know. It's out there in the world. Okay, yeah, I'll let you. I'll let you retract that.
All right.
The answer we're looking for now, this is not for points. What did you think it was?
Was it South Park?
It was South Park.
Okay. Yeah.
Tara, here is your actual question.
Okay.
Your malady is super diarrhea. Simple and evocative.
Well, first of all, I don't... appreciate having my personal life mined for questions and game time. super diarrhea.
It's on the last episode of These Things I Know to Be True. I'm sorry. You have super diarrhea.
Is this Futurama
terminal.
Again?
Terminal.
Okay.
It is not.
All right.
From an animated cartoon for which this is very much on brand. I don't think that's going to help you.
Okay. Is it Beavis and Butthead?
American Dad.
Good guess.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe if you watched American Dad, that would make sense. Ba-ba-ba. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
Re-vitiligo. Re-vitiligo.
Re-vitiligo?
Yeah.
Space ghost?
A skin condition that turns a white person's skin black. Uncle Ruckus claims to have it, but he's not exactly a reliable source.
I don't know. Fat Albert?
Steel Mill.
Steel Mill from Bobby.
Boondocks.
Boondocks. Correct. Hey. 1 point. And here's your actual question, Bobby. Oh boy, here we go. Proxyglossariasis. Hey, I got it out. I'm not repeating it. Hope you heard it. Proxyglossariasis.
Oh, my God. I'm going to say one that I hear you mention all the time, Clone High.
That's a good guess.
A condition that causes someone, while speaking, to occasionally use the next word in the dictionary instead of the one they intended. Might be caused by exposure to Jason Alexander.
Oh. What was that? Duckman.
That's good
nice
for one.
Pull.
I did not know that was somewhere in my brain.
This is the last question of our animated section for
okay.
Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Head go boom boom itis.
Uh-huh. Rick and Morty.
That's a good guess.
Okay.
A thing where adults who get a head injury start behaving and talking like children. The only cure is to hit your head again, preferably on the ice machine at your fast food restaurant.
At your fast food restaurant. Is this SpongeBob again?
It is!
Wow!
1 point. Nice. Well done. That will take us into the score break. Tara, scores please.
This is a very close game.
Uh-huh.
I have 5 points. Sarah has 4 points. Bobby has 3 points.
All right, Bobby, that means you are now in. The Grossworth Equalizer Challenge Zone. Get three of the 6 questions on the Trivial Pursuit TV box question card I'm holding in my hand right. You will get points of 4. Are you ready?
Exciting. Yes.
We'll start you off with classics. What police force does Dudley Do-Right toil for on Rocky and Bullwinkle?
Canadian Mounted Rockies.
Yeah, that's good enough. Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
I didn't mean to insult my Canadian friends.
Or just the Mounties would have been fine. we'll give you that one. Sitcoms. What does the acronym LOL mean on the Golden Girls?
Oh, I should know this. I mean, is it possible it's the Laughing Out Louds?
It is not. Sarah, do you know? You're a Golden Girl person.
I don't.
Little Old Ladies.
Oh, oh. Sure.
All right.
I'm never going to hear the end of that.
Okay. Drama. Who's the science officer of the Starship Enterprise?
Oh, I'm such a nerd, and but that's the one thing I'm not a nerd about. Science officer is Sulu?
And in that nerd card, sir, that is Mr. Spock.
Spock.
Oh, God, it's so obvious.
I was gonna say, Sarah knows that one.
I'll see
sure.
myself out.
Okay. Yeah.
You've got one. You need two more. Three questions left. Kids and games is your next category. What cartoon family lived in the Skypad apartments?
The Jetsons.
You are correct. Two questions left. Need one. What televangelist sobbed, "I have sinned," in a sermon telecast on February 21st, 1988?
Oh, Jimmy Swagger.
You are correct. And those.
Yeah, buddy.
We'll get all you right. the points.
Well
Tara,
done.
Can I get the updated scores now?
Sweet.
You sure can. Oof. Now, Sarah has 4 points. I have 5 points. Bobby's in the lead with 7 points.
Nice. Done. All right.
Thank you.
The tables have turned.
Equalizer, challenge zone, equalizing all the zones.
Indeed.
Let's get back to it. Part two, live action TV shows.
Okay.
To Sarah. Bendy syndrome, B-E-N-D-I-I. Maybe Bendai.
Bendy. Baywatch.
Baywatch. Bendai syndrome, a degenerative neurological disease that affects elderly pointy-eared humanoids.
Pointy-eared humanoids? Star Trek?
Can you please qualify it?
The original series?
No.
No. Star Trek Next Generation.
What?
Fox Dad.
Oh.
I think gets it. Then Surik comes back. And
oh, sure.
He's got the bend eyes from going up in space
enough.
Too quick or something. All right, Bobby. Your disease, simply known as purity.
Sounds like it must be from Firefly.
An nice. Alien virus that looks like an oil slick and takes over people's bodies.
Oh, X-Files.
Correct for one. Tara.
Yep.
Boner splasia.
Again, don't appreciate my personal life being mined for this game. Boner splasia.
Yeah.
Scrubs.
A medical condition that explains why Jason Sudeikis is always aroused by Anne Hathaway, even though he claims to be gay.
Claims to be gay. The Last Man on Earth?
Saturday Night Live.
Oh. Okay.
To Sarah. Uromycetosis poisoning.
Rock.
A condition where, if you don't pee, you'll die, especially if you're trapped in a parking garage.
I have absolutely no idea, but because of the parking garage, I'm going to guess 24 to keep it fun.
Steel meal. Seinfeld.
Correct. Nice. For 1 point. This is question 17.
The spread eagle.
Spread eagle.
It is for Bobby. Croatoan virus.
I'm going to say, is that 30 Rock?
A demonic virus that makes people violent and dangerous, and then the brothers have to kill you.
What's that show? Supernatural.
That's good for one. Well done.
Nice.
Tara.
Yes.
Thripshaw's disease.
Thripshaw's disease.
Thripshaw's
God
disease.
God damn it. I know this one and it's fallen out of my head. I'm just going to say 30 Rock so I can get the clue.
a malady that causes the patient to say words in the wrong order. It was made into a film, but the adaptation was so disappointing that Dr. Thripshaw began working on a new disease that he hoped would turn it into a musical. Then there are a bunch of silly noises.
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? I don't know.
Anybody want to take a guess? Just a safe guess. Monty Firefly? Python's Flying Circus.
Damn it.
Sorry. All right.
Well, I did know.
Is question. It's for Sarah. Spontaneous dental hydrosplosion.
Is dental hydrosplosion? Sleepy Hollow?
A thing where your teeth turn a thing where your teeth turn into liquid and drop down your throat. This is a fake illness that is not going to be covered any more than Count Chocolitis or hot dog fingers.
I mean, I don't know. Is this Saturday Night Live? I don't know this.
Steely Hill. Is this Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt? Fuck!
It is not.
Oh!
It's The Office.
Oh, right. I thought it was one of the jingles that he was singing about. Okay. Yeah, right.
To Bobby.
Oh, you know, no.
Yeah. Spectrox. Spectrox. Toxamia.
ER.
The show ER? No.
ER.
Oh, ER.
Starring
Elsa. I mean, it might make you sad, I guess. Incorrect. A fatal condition contracted by touching... Sorry, I got the giggles. A fatal condition contracted by touching Spectrox, which is the residue of bat saliva from the planet of Aldazoni Minor, causes rash, spasms, and finally thermal death point. The only cure is milk from one of the queen bats.
Oh.
A whole lot of nonsense in two sentences.
I have no... Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
That's like too silly for Star Trek Deep Space Nine something. And of course, Doctor Who. Doctor Who.
Oh.
Word salad. All right. Tara.
Oop. Yeah.
Shantivirus.
My name is Earl.
A disease that affects and kills only people with superhuman abilities such as flight, telepathy, and warping space-time.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Shit.
Heroes.
Ah.
To Sarah. Imminent death syndrome.
Different strokes.
A condition where a person can die at any time, usually within 80 to 100 years. It won't prevent you from learning how to play the guitar, but it won't exactly make you good at it either.
Oh, I'm going to be mad when I hear what this is, but I don't know. 30 Rock?
Steel Meal. Mr. Show.
Mr. Show, correct for 1 point on the Steel Meal. To Bobby. Hepatitis 5. It could be Hepatitis V, but... I don't know.
I know that we keep going to this, but it's like there's only a certain amount of time before Dr. Spichemin comes up, and I think this is 30 Rock.
Correct. A weaponized strain of hepatitis that is used to kill vampires, even the sexy ones.
So probably Hepatitis B.
Probably, yeah.
Buffy?
Incorrect. True Blood.
Oh, yeah.
Tara,
yes.
Take us into our second score break.
Yes.
Barclay's protomorphosis syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Barclay's protomorphosis syndrome.
Angel.
Named after the lieutenant who came in to get shots for Yordelian flu and sparked an outbreak that caused him to devolve into a spider and the counselor to become amphibious.
Star Trek The Next Generation?
Star Trek The Next Generation, yes, indeed.
Yikes.
And now, the score break.
Well, Bobby has 10 points. I have 7 points. Sarah D. Bunting has 4 points.
All right, Sarah D. Bunting, that means you are now in the Grossworth Equalizer Charlotte Zone. All right. You know the drill. We'll start you off with the classics.
Good luck. Thanks.
Weird synchronicity here. Classics. What Rocky and his friends duo enjoyed time travel in the Wayback Machine?
Bullwinkle?
Sherman and Mr. Peabody. Sitcom. What Night Court character is addicted to magic tricks?
Harry.
Judge Harry Stone, correct. Drama. What show became TV's longest-running medical series, running from 69 to 76? Asterisk.
At the time.
The time.
Longest-running medical series.
Yes.
Oh. Quincy Emmy?
A quaint 7 years. Medical Center. That sounds really just boring. It's like,
elevator.
Urgent care.
Yeah, exactly.
Waiting room.
What children's show has characters named X the Owl, Dr. Duckbill, and Don Quixote? Don Quixote.
Oh, I see.
Don Quixote.
Cute.
X the Owl, Dr. Duckbill, Don Quixote.
Howdy Doody?
Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. All right, you need both of these. Stars. What CBS anchorman described the new breed of TV reporters of having majored in trench coat 1 and 2 and makeup 1 and 2?
What CBS anchor? I'm torn. But I'm going to guess Dan Rather. Cronkite.
Walter Cronkite.
Motherfuck.
All right, you didn't get it, but there's still some game to go. So let's get back into it. Reminder, these are live action. And everybody has 2 questions left.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting, Grote's disease. G-R-O-A-T. Grote's disease.
Grote's disease. Firefly.
A deadly neurological disorder that prevents the patient from controlling their excitement, appropriately enough.
Is this Kimmy Schmidt?
Incorrect. That was Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh. Okay.
To Bobby. Geodermic granititis.
Oh, God. MacGyver.
A disease that gradually turns human beings into a pile of rocks may be cured by the application of Dr. Philip Lavender's anti-cobbling cream.
Oh, God. This almost sounds like it could be an SNL sketch with, like, Will Forte being the doctor. I'm going to say SNL.
Incorrect.
Steel meal
from... All right.
Look around.
It is Look Around You. Well done. Correct.
Oh, Thara.
Hobbles, for short.
Tara?
Yes.
Ghost sickness.
Ghost sickness.
Ghost, as in... Uh-huh.
Right.
Sickness.
Buffy.
A condition you get from hanging around ghosts too much. It makes you afraid of every little thing, which means you can't help your brother kill the ghost that gave it to you.
Supernatural?
Natural.
Of course.
The brother category. All right, everybody's last question coming at you, so the scores, please, quickly.
Oh, boy. All right. Okay. Well, Sarah has 4 points. I have 9 points. Bobby has 10 points.
All right.
Oh, so Tara
could tie it up and force a tiebreaker, but only if Bobby gets... Oh, no, wait, there's 2 points in place. Anything could happen. Who knows? The world is everybody's oyster. Oysters! Here we go.
Except Sarah's.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yep.
The phage. The phage.
P-H-A-G-E?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct spelling.
The phage.
The phage.
Jeez, I don't know. Walking Dead.
A plague that affects members of the entire Voldian race in the Gamma Quadrant has trouble affecting Klingon DNA.
Well, it's a pity that I never got around to answering Benson, but I've missed my chance. I will answer Star Trek Original Series again.
Star Trek Space Shuttle. Star Trek Voyager.
Duh.
All right, Bobby. Okay. You could clinch it here with a 2-point
Space.
Guess.
Look.
Oh, thank you.
Your disease is Cordilla virus. Cordilla virus.
Is that Walking Dead?
Cordilla virus. A weaponized virus made by terrorists that can kill you in 14 episodes. I mean hours.
Oh, 24.
That's good for 1 point. So Tara needs the 2 point to force the tiebreaker.
That's correct.
Your disease, Tara Ariano. You need the 2 point answer.
Yeah.
Cluckitis.
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 A live action show where there's a disease.
Yes.
Called Cluckitis. Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. No, I see where you're going there with Chicken Lady.
Yeah.
Incorrect. This highly contagious disease turns you into a chicken. Humans can get it too, such as special guest star Roger Miller.
I don't remember Roger Miller guest starring on anything. Hee-haw?
You're in the right.
Oh, okay.
Thing. The Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show.
All right, I believe that means that Bobby has won.
You're correct.
Another victory for Bobby.
Nice.
Guess. Before we make it official, let's use that tiebreaker for an additional steel meal for future use. The tiebreaker is Cosmic Rust. Any ideas?
Futurama.
Futurama is incorrect.
Okay, I'm out.
You're out until I start reading the additional clue.
Okay.
Bobby, Sarah, guesses at this point?
Firefly.
Bobby?
Star Trek. Deep Space Nine.
Incorrect. A disease which affects Cybertronians caused by a microorganism that feeds on metal.
Doctor Who.
If left untreated, the infected eventually crumble into a pile of rust. A disease which affects Cybertronians.
Battlestar Galactica.
No.
Exticles.
No. Cybertron. Cybertronians. Transformers.
Oh,
dear. Thought you guys would have had that one.
No.
Especially Bobby, who apparently has a nerd card with an asterisk that says, I don't know Star Trek.
I literally have Star Wars action figures on my desk, and I'm a grown man, but I lost the Star Trek and all these other nerd ones today.
It doesn't matter, Bobby, because guess what? You won.
Yeah. Valued guest.
Valued guest.
Well done. I jest. You're a nerd, Bobby.
Oh,
a poet
you.
Nerd. Well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took a look at HBO's disarming family tragedy pile-on, These Things I Believe, before going around the dial with stops at Regular Heroes, the Antenna TV Comfort Blanket, TM, American Experience, and The Good Fight. Jeff asked us to snap defeat from the jaws of TV finale victory, and Bobby was victorious in his quest to get News Radio's president into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Bobby, playing for a value guess, was the winner of this week's Game Time. Next up on Extra Extra Hot Great, it's Sarah watching Parks and Rec. Then on the next Extra Hot Great Prime is Ultimate Tag. Remember...
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I am Deep Throat.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Good sandwich.
And Robert Krutt.
That wasn't entirely unpleasant.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grape.
Ooh. I just had this vision of Diane Sawyer licking birdseed out of your palm.
That's right, baby. Eat it up, eat it all up.